Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I am one of your hosts, Anna, and I am joined by one of my book besties, Kim.
Hello.
We are so excited, you guys, because we have the greatest honor and pleasure of interviewing the great Carissa Broadbent, author of the War of Lost Hearts series and the Crown of Nyaxia series. Her new book, The Songbird and the Heart of Stone, is coming out shortly after this interview is released, and we cannot wait for you to read it. It is absolutely amazing. We were honored to be able to have an arc of the book, and it has been such a joy to be back in this world. And before we get started, though, Kim, do you want to shout out some of our Tier 2 patrons?
I would love to, Anna. So as always, we are going to be shouting out our Tier 2 buck bitches. If you're unfamiliar with our Patreon, that is one of the benefits of being a Tier 2 patron. You get a shout out in one of our episodes. So this episode, we are going to be shouting out Madison Smith, Brittany Smith, Connor Levins, Maya Rusanen, and Lindsay Galicki. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. It truly means the world to us.
Thank you guys so much. And thank you to everyone who has supported the podcast by rating and reviewing the show. If you're loving the podcast, please take a minute to rate and review us on your favorite platform. It really makes a big difference and helps us reach more listeners.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And so with that, listeners, this is your spoiler warning for the entire Crowns of Nyaxia series. That's Serpent and the Wings of Night, Ashes and the Star-Cursed King, as well as the novella Six Scorched Roses. The format of this episode will be the first part of it. We'll cover all of the main two duologies in the Crowns of Nyaxia series. And then at the very end, we will have a spoiler-free discussion of Songbird and the Heart of Stone. If you want to hear our spoiler discussion on this book, it will be released on Patreon after the book Songbird and the Heart of Stone comes out next week.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You guys do not want to miss this. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And so without further ado, let's dive in.
Yay.
Hi, Carissa. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are so excited to have you here. We are huge fans of your War of Lost Hearts trilogy and your Crown of Nyaxia series. And I wish we had time to discuss both, but we're going to be focusing this interview on the Crowns of Nyaxia series. But before we dive in, we have recorded episodes on all of your books.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure we are pronouncing Mish's name correctly, because we were going off of the pronunciation guide on your Instagram stories. But I know that Asar spells it out Misha in the book. And I feel badly now because I think we were saying Misha in our original, the duology with the Serpent and the Wings of Night and Rain.
So I'm about to embarrass myself. First of all, I'll say I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much.
I just totally bulldozed over you.
No, that's fine. And I'll start by like kind of humbling myself and humiliating myself a little bit where my names are so chaotic. They are chaos. I know they are. I frequently would switch between pronunciations like Araya is another one where like half the time I would call her Araya and half the time I'd call her Araya. And then the audiobook people are like, okay, tell us how to pronounce your characters. Yeah. And I just would have to pick one. So all this time, I thought that I told the audiobook people Misha. Mm-hmm. And that was like, okay, official pronunciation.
Right.
And then when it came time to record Songbird, they emailed me and they were like, you know that we've been saying Misha this whole time. Like, is Misha okay? And I was like, Fuck. So I guess audiobook official is Misha. I've switched to saying Misha because apparently that is what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay. And that's what I told everybody else to do.
Got it.
So yeah, my I accept either personally.
Okay.
But yeah, Misha is technically the official pronunciation.
Okay.
Okay. Well, now that we've cleared that up, we've been saying Misha. We will try and pivot and say Misha going forward.
I think either is fine. And if she was here with us, I don't think she'd be offended by either.
I mean, knowing her personally, I feel like she wouldn't either.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we want to chat a little bit about world building. Crown of Nyxia is such a diverse world. We have various vampire houses, gods, lore. How did you approach building this world specifically in comparison to your War of Lost Hearts series?
That's a great question because they were very deliberately different. Mm. So the War of Lost Hearts books, it was like I had this character and I had this story and the world kind of built around her, like around her and around the story. When I sat down to plan out the Crowns of Nyxia series, I very deliberately chose to go the opposite direction, meaning I came up with a world, a big world, and then I found stories within it that I wanted to tell. And I deliberately wanted to like have a world that was very big and very varied with like lots of different possibility and stories within it. Not to say that I have like, you know, like there are some like epic fantasy authors who will write like a freaking Bible about their world before they write a page of the story. I'm not that organized. It was more like, let me kind of like stake out the edges of this big world. Like, I know I want these 12 gods and the magic system is built, you know, based on these gods. There's this huge world and all these continents, and then kind of slowly zoomed into the continent that I wanted to be on and then found the stories within that.
That is so fascinating. So we actually call you the queen of prologues because across both of your series, War of Lost Hearts and Crowns of Nyxia, your prologues have truly become one of the things that we look forward to the most when we open one of your books.
Yes.
Because it is so, so rare to see an author who can captivate their audience so quickly in the first paragraph of a book. Like, let's take, for example, Songbird in the Heart of Stone. The first line is, "This is the story of how a chosen one falls." Immediately you have our attention. Like, please tell me more. So can you talk a little bit about how you conceive those parts of the story?
Thank you very much, because I know some people have like very strong negative feelings to prologues and I just like refuse to give them up. Like, I love them so much.
Oh my gosh.
Literally our favorite part of your books. It's like one of our favorite parts.
Thank you.
They're incredible.
I feel very validated. So now when I start like a new series and somebody, you know, like an agent or an editor is like, maybe don't, I'm gonna be like, no.
We will be disappointed.
That's right.
Okay, great. I'm gonna keep this for posterity. So I originally started doing prologues in the War of Lost Hearts books. Actually, maybe my series before that, my like bad series that I don't talk about, that's not available anymore.
What?
Yeah. It's really not good. You don't want to read it. It's not great. I listened to this really excellent lecture by Dan Wells. It's called The 7-Point Story Structure or something like that. The 7 something story structure. You can find it on YouTube. And he talks about like plot structure, but he talks about prologues as the quote-unquote ice monster prologue. And he talks about it like in the context of Game of Thrones. Like, you know, at the beginning of Game of Thrones, there's like this prologue, a confession. I've never read the book, but even in the show, they adapt it faithfully. There's this part where like a guy is like out in the winter worlds, whatever, and he sees the zombies, the ice zombies. Right.
Yeah.
So it kind of tells you, like as a reader or a viewer, like, hey, I know that we're going to be doing some slow world building stuff, but like there's going to be ice zombies.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
This is where we're going.
This is where we're going. Yeah. So whenever I sit down to do a prologue, like some of it is just me being like literary self-indulgent because I love to like do that whole shtick. But it's also like I try to give the reader a taste of what is to come much later in the book. Like actually almost all of my prologues tell you the end of the book in some way.
Ooh, yes.
That's a game that I like to play.
Yeah.
It is a really good bookend. I mean, I can't give a spoiler right now for Songbird, but when we get there, I'm gonna pin that thought.
Yeah.
Yes. I always try to like, one of my little games with myself is that I like to try to make a prologue that like reads very differently if you read it again after reading the book.
Yes.
So
and hits.
Sometimes I pull it off and sometimes I don't, but thank you. Thank you.
You always pull it off. Always. It is truly so incredible. So do the prologues come to you at the beginning, or is it one of the last things you write, or does it depend on the book?
I always write the prologue first. It usually changes very dramatically when I come back at the end.
Oh.
Because of that foreshadowing and stuff, like sometimes things change or whatever. Mm. I do always write the interludes, like in between the parts. Oh. I write those at the very, very end. And I write them all at once.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was curious about that. This is not a spoiler, listeners, for Songbird. But in Songbird, you have these little interludes before each part of the book. And Kim, Chrissy, and I, we all looked forward to it.
Yes.
When we knew a new part was coming, because we're like, oh, we get another interlude.
We get an interlude.
Yeah. Oh, they're so beautiful. They were some of our favorite parts. I can't wait to discuss them later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I think most of our listeners know that when covering your books, a huge section of our outline is dedicated to your villains that you've written. And the reason for that is that we have rarely encountered an author who has been able to tackle the concept of like a true morally gray character. And personally, I have a background in theater. And something that's so important when we're creating a character's backstory is that you have to remember that no one is a villain in their own story. And I feel like in Crowns of Nyaxia, that is specifically is Vincent. And he is just so fascinating to read.
Mm-hmm.
What was your process when developing his character, and how did you navigate like the complexities of writing such a morally gray character?
Oh, this is one of my favorite things. I love writing very morally gray characters, and not just morally gray in like I feel like in the book world, people sometimes use it to describe like, oh, here's like a hot man who'll totally kill somebody because he loves you so much, you know? And like,
yes,
that's morally gray because we shouldn't kill people in real life. But like, yeah, like actually complicated people.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I thought about a lot when I was writing the War of Lost Hearts series is it's very hard to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Like in real life, there are many people who want to be better people, who genuinely like love the people around them and are still like constantly hurting them because they just cannot get it together. Like it's...
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like as a storyteller, if you want to show people overcoming those obstacles, it makes it much more impactful to also see people who are incapable of overcoming those obstacles.
Mm. Yes.
So I frequently thought about that with Vincent because like, especially in the context of like Ashes, because so much of that is about like, you know, in this really brutal world, is it like possible to hold power without like truly emotionally damaging yourself, like beyond the point where you can be a positive influence, even to the person that you love, like more than anything in the world.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting. And that's why Vincent is like one of my favorite characters that I've ever written, because he's like so complicated.
Extremely complicated.
He's very complicated. And I feel like, you know, if this world actually existed, there would be like a lot of guys like Vincent, you know, like a lot of people who are just like not, people joke about him being like the hot dad and whatnot. Like, yeah, in the fictional scenario, that's like, you know, fun. But like he's a fucking mess.
Yeah.
He's a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for a character who's quote unquote kind of the villain-esque, especially in book one. He's not, that's the thing though, is he's not. Like, yeah. That's why we loved him so much. There was such a great like backstory with him and Aurea that I think you could see these moments of humanity in him and the way that he loved Aurea. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful to read. And I remember in book two, we all of us ate up any little moment that Aurea would have a flashback or a memory with him or did that kind of inner monologue where Vincent was talking to her.
Yeah.
And we were so excited to get him on page any chance we got.
Yeah.
So, okay. So before we move on, we just want to touch upon Septimus really quick. Mm-hmm. Because going back to the hot Morley Greg little tidbit, he's giving us hot bad boy energy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We also heard you say in one of your interviews that he's like evil. So is he... like, how evil is he? Can we expect to see more of him possibly in other books? Because we loved his character too.
Did I use the term evil? I mean...
I remember you called him hot. And I thought you said he also...
he is hot, yes.
We've always thought he was hot.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, he is... All right. He is very relevant to this discussion because he is the epitome of somebody who is very much a hero in their own story. Mm. But like in this world, like you can't... like if you're him, I mean, are you going to spend all your time thinking about like, oh, it would be really mean of me to do like this mean thing to the House of Night who has been like, you know,
yeah,
like attacking and tearing down my kingdom for the last like 2000 years, right, you know, right. Like, are you thinking like, oh no, I can't be mean to Rain. That would no. be terrible. You know, like you're.
Yeah.
So yes, he is big. He's a big character.
Okay.
Okay.
And I am very eager to get to his, like, the bulk of his whole story.
I mean, we're very excited. Obviously, we've gotten the Nightborn vampires, and then Songbird is the Shadowborn vampires. And so I'm guessing Septimus will be in the Bloodborn vampires when you dive into that. But we have a saying on our podcast that, like, it's war times. Like, sometimes you just have to do things.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, we just got to get things done. And yeah. You're right. You're not always apologizing. You're not always thinking, oh, am I going to hurt somebody? Like, you're protecting your people.
Yeah. And it's worth noting that, like, he related to Aurea because she's a human, like, living in this world, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's not human, but... the Bloodborne have like much shorter lifespans than all the other vampires because they're cursed.
Cursed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And they're looked down upon by all of the other vampires. So he kind of gets it. Like, I don't know if we see a little bit of this in like Slaying the Vampire Conqueror, which is like a spinoff mm-hmm. book.
Yeah.
And like the House of Blood is like culturally very different than a lot of the other, all the vampire kingdoms kind of have their own like societal culture.
Right.
You know, they're all pretty brutal, but they all have like different ways of showing that. And the House of Blood is like the only one that they are much more collaborative is not the word I'm looking for, but they're more, you know, they're like tight knit, like they're less, they're more likely to like actually care about their children and like,
interesting. Oh, yeah.
Right.
They don't stick around that long. So they have to stick together a little bit more than the others.
Yeah.
We don't see that so much, the Shadowborn and the Nightborn. They're they're often their offspring.
Yeah.
If they feel threatened.
Yeah. Oh, no. They're mean. Yeah. Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, thank you for that. We just love your true morally great characters. Like you said, they're just really fascinating to read.
They are. So something we've touched upon is power and vulnerability being really strong themes in all of your books. And we love your ability to showcase these moments. So in Serpent, we have these trials. It's high stress, lots of death. And then interspersed, you have these really quiet moments with Rain and Aurea. They're walking through the human village. They're sitting on a rooftop, sharing these really intimate and personal stories. So how do you strike a balance between depicting these strong, capable, badass characters and also showing their more vulnerable moments, especially when they're in such a high-stakes fantasy setting? Mm.
That's a great question. I pulled it out of my ass, mostly.
That's okay.
The character... moments and like the character arcs are very important to me as a writer. Like, actually, sometimes I go a little too far in that direction and a book might seem like boring or like too slow, and then I have to like pull back a little bit. But like, that's what I like really like writing. And
yeah,
I say this a lot in interviews, but like for the romances in particular, it's always very important to me that by the end of a romance, the reader feels like the characters actually like each other and are actually going to be like a long-term partnership.
Yeah.
You know, not just like, oh, we have all this like unresolved sexual tension and like we're you know, real banging in bed together. You know, we love that too. But like, sometimes you ever read a book and you get to the end and you're like, they would definitely divorce. You know, like there's just like, do they even know each other? Right. Like, yes, they love fucking. Yeah. Like, what else? You know?
Totally.
Yeah. So I rely a lot upon those moments, not just for the reader, but even for me, like to get to know them more. Mm-hmm. Like my first drafts actually tend to be a little bit lower on like the sexual tension. And then because I'm getting to know the characters and their relationship. And then I end up going back and like pulling more of that forward. But yeah, that was a very rambling answer. I love writing those scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those were some of our
favorites for sure.
Yeah. I loved the scenes on the rooftops, especially where we kind of get a little more insight into Rain and he's vulnerable and Aurea finally starts to open up. They were some of our favorites to read. Lots of highlighting.
Yeah.
So basically highlight your entire book. So.
We do. Yeah. We do.
Oh, I'm honored by that. Do you want to hear another story that's going to make me look terrible? So when I was writing Serpent, I had never like smoked weed or like had a gummy or anything, like never. And then I had a gummy from the first time ever.
Uh-huh.
And because I was really blocked like on the book and I was kind of like, I'm like really stressed out. And like also maybe I'll get like inspiration or whatever. Fine.
Sure.
Yeah. Nothing like crazy. Again, like, I'm a lightweight. I had never, never done that. So, you know, it's legal where I am. So sure. Fine.
Yeah.
So I'm lying on the couch and I'm like not feeling anything. Like I'm like saying to my husband, like, I feel the same. Like I feel a little tired, but whatever.
Yeah.
And then we ordered pizza and I was eating chicken wings and I was like, these are fucking amazing. Like, this is incredible. And I thought to myself, like, I've got it. They should eat chicken wings. They should eat chicken wings. Like, that's what should happen in this book. That's how the characters are going to connect to each other. Because I was having a hard time, like, really feeling, like, their connection.
Yeah.
They should eat chicken wings. And I was like, oh, my God, fucking brilliant, Carissa. You are so smart. In the moment, this seemed like such a great idea. But in a way, it was. Because that is where the rooftop and the pub scenes came from me sitting there high, eating chicken wings and being like, this is fucking amazing.
I've nailed it. I've got it. It's a breakthrough.
I love that.
And it was. It turned out it was a little bit because actually them going into that crappy pub for the first time in Serpent was when I started to feel like, oh, they're clicking for me. Because before that, they kind of weren't for me, like as characters, like they had the sexual tension, but like kind of that's it. But that's when it really broke through. So,
oh yeah,
there you go. Now you know.
Oh, that's so fascinating to read. Because I mean, I remember us texting about that when they went into the human realm, into the little tavern and have their ale and then it becomes like a part of them. And then it leads to the rooftops and it's great. Oh, that's awesome. I love that story.
That's a great story.
That's great.
Amazing.
The chicken wings. Oh my God. Okay. So obviously we're obsessed with Aurea and Rain. Well, I feel like you've already kind of answered this, but I was going to say their relationship really evolves throughout the series. I was going to say, what was the most challenging part of writing their relationship? But I'm guessing was that kind of the hardest part for you was just trying to get them to connect in that way.
Yeah. And myself like feeling it too, especially coming off of the third book in the War of Lost Hearts series where the characters had so much history already and they were so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you're starting from zero again and you have to be like, oh man, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
Because they haven't like gotten there yet.
Sure.
Yeah. And then also the other thing, writing Ashes was very hard because I sat down to write like chapter one. And then I was like, oh, fuck. Jesus Christ. Like, how are they going to come back from this? You know, like, woof, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He kills her father. Like, how do we come back from this?
That's tough to come back from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it sure is. You know, in real life, I'd be like, honey, there's lots of guys in the world, you know?
Yeah. Like, maybe this isn't the one.
No, maybe not.
Yeah, right. Maybe not.
That's funny. Well, do you have a favorite scene or one that you particularly enjoyed writing about them? From either book.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, I really liked those pub scenes mm-hmm. that we talked about. And then I also really loved in Ashes the scene. Am I allowed to be specific with Ashes?
Yes, you can do spoilers. Yes, yes, yes. With both Serpent and Ashes.
Okay. The scene where Rain pushes her off the rooftop so that she finds her wings.
Yeah.
I really liked that scene a lot because, well, it's like a funny reversal, you know, of like.
It is funny.
But also because it like really highlights the difference between Rain and Vincent, or like Rain and mm-hmm. all of the like other kings and the other powerful people in this world who are constantly like,
right.
because he is like out here actively trying to like help her find her own strength, even when it's like very directly not smart for him.
Yeah.
You know, like she's very dangerous to him.
Sure.
So I really enjoyed that scene.
Yeah. That scene is great. Yeah. We love that part. That was with the, is that with the creepy little girl? Who like never grew up.
Yeah, yeah. There was a little creepy little girl. Yes. Yes.
That was one of our favorite parts to read. It was so much fun.
Yeah. Unsettling in the best way.
That's what I aim for.
Well,
nail on the head.
Like you nailed it. Nailed it. You know, speaking of Rain, another layer that we loved to see is obviously his relationship with Misha. They share such a unique kind of sibling-like bond, and it really added a lot of depth and warmth to both the story and to their characters. How did you go about kind of developing their friendship and their shared backstory?
So I think friendship is really important, and I love showing those kinds of like strong platonic relationships. And in particular, like they're also an interesting way for me to like explore love interests who don't have their own POV, like in that book, you know, too. Misha just kind of like popped up. She actually was an accidental character for me when I was writing Serpent. And up until like kind of the halfway mark, like close to the halfway mark, I was thinking like I'm writing her. And I'm thinking like, I might have to cut this character. Like, I don't know if she's, you know, gonna make it. And then, of course, by the halfway mark, I was like, okay, she's important. She's staying. I really like her. She plays a plot role. Like,
yeah,
you know, she's important. And then between Serpent and Ashes was when I decided I have a high level idea for like all three duologies. So books one and two kind of turned out to be, you know, what they are. Books five and six are going to turn out to be what they are. I kind of knew that from the start. Books three and four, that second duology, morphed the most out of all of them because I found myself in between Serpent and Ashes kind of being like not that excited for it. And then when I was getting more attached to Misha, and I was like, you know what? I think this is hers. Like, this is her story. And it changed. I mean, there's obviously elements of it that were are the same, but it became Misha's story. And that's when I started getting like excited about it. So anyway, but yeah, she and Rain have like a, I love their relationship, and we get a lot more of it in future books too, because it's like, they love each other so much, but they're also like super codependent. Like,
yeah,
it's like a very much like two people who would not have survived without each other. Like in a world where they did not meet, I don't think either of them would have made it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But as a result of that, their friendship is not always like completely healthy, really, because they're very reliant on each other.
I know, but it's so sweet. It's so cute.
It is so sweet. They love each other so much. Like, so much.
Oh, God.
They do. Oh, God. Love them. Okay, well, speaking of Misha, we're going to move into our spoiler-free discussion of Songbird. So when we last saw Misha, she was saying goodbye to Aurea and Rain. Can you speak a little bit about where we are with her at the end of book two, Ashes and the Star-Cursed King, and her decision to leave Rain and Aurea?
Yeah. So, okay, and I can be spoilery with Ashes, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes. So Misha, we kind of get the sense at the end of Ashes that there's like more going on with her that she's withholding. Because Misha, for as much as she is like an extroverted and a very like affectionate person, she's very secretive and withholding when it comes to like her own shit. So she had killed the Shadowborn Prince, who is the man who turned her. And then she tells Rain, you know, after the war is over, like I'm peacing out. I need to like go see the world and whatnot. And Rain's a little bit like, pretty sure it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit, but you're an adult. Yeah. I can't like keep you here. So yeah. I guess bye, you know?
Yeah.
And then in the epilogue, like the bonus epilogue for Ashes, when it was traditionally published, we learned that like it's been 6 months and they don't hear from her
right
at all anymore.
Yeah.
So she kind of like slow ghosted, which is very distressing to Rain in particular.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can only imagine.
Yeah. She's going through some stuff. She has a good heart.
She really does.
She really does.
And I know you just touched upon Misha and like you didn't go in knowing you were going to write her story. Was there a moment though that made you go, oh, like I want to write her story?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was when in Serpent, when there was this big attack on the Moon Palace and Araya and Rain go to rescue her and she has all the candles around her.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So heartbreaking.
Yeah. And that's when, you know, we learn that she can't, you know, wield her sun magic anymore.
Mm-hmm. Troxus.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, that's when I was like, oh, she's got like a story. And that scene kind of just like came to me. I knew
yeah.
I have like a loose outline. So like I knew, you know, Moon Palace attack, gotta go save Misha, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But like as I was writing, the aspect of the candles around her and the whole like, you know, I called and called and he didn't come type stuff. That kind of came to me as I was drafting it. And that's when I was like, oh, she's got a story for sure.
Yeah.
And I was very interested in that idea of like, what happens if you're an acolyte of like a god who is very, you know, anti-vampire and then become a vampire. Like that's,
yeah,
that must be a real head trip. That,
yes.
That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
So I would love to tell that.
No, I'm so excited to discuss that in our next section when we do spoilers. So I'm really excited.
Yeah.
We have questions.
Oh yeah. That's the most fun part of this world for me is like, there's so many places for like these contradictions. And she embodies that. So I was thinking for a while, like, oh, maybe she'll get a spinoff or something. And then I eventually came to the conclusion that like she was more interesting than what I had been thinking for books 3 and 4. So that kind of became her story.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. So we read your L article that you did where you spoke a little bit about Songbird and we were dying over your synopsis, which is literally just, we're going to hell.
Get in, loser. Let's go.
Get in, loser. We're going to hell. So what made you decide to take the setting of Misha's story and place it outside of kind of the normal Shadowborn realm and instead place it in the underworld?
I just thought it would be fun.
It was.
Yeah, thank you. I really like exploring like different settings and the opportunities for like shit to get weird. Honestly, like I love writing some like weird dark fantasy horror stuff, and I God bless you for those of you who come along on the ride with me on that stuff, because it's very fun for me. So I was really intrigued by like the possibilities of it. Originally, they were kind of going to be more in the House of Shadow. Like I originally had them like they'd go and then kind of like come back and then like go and come back. And then my husband, when I was like lamenting this book, my husband was like, if I was Nyaxia, I would be so fucking angry that this guy won't just go on his mission. Why are you coming back? Yeah. Just go.
That's great. That's hilarious. I mean, this is not a spoiler, but we loved the various sanctums. But speaking of horror, we at one point when we were reading, we were like, this is like Alice in Wonderland, but make it horror.
But make it like fantasy horror.
There's the mushrooms, these giant mushrooms that grow in one of the sanctums. And it was just really, it's really cool. We loved it. The world building was amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, okay. Speaking of Songbird, what can you tell us about our new love interest, Asar? Because We are obsessed.
I'm glad that you are, because he's like my favorite. He's like my favorite so far,
really?
I think.
Oh my God.
Definitely of the Nyaxia guys, like, I think he's my fave. I was asked at an event recently, would you go for like Rain or Vale? And I was like,
ooh, Vale.
Neither. I would definitely, if I had to pick one for myself, like Asar is definitely that guy for me.
Yeah.
Personally. Won't make me go to a stinky pub. Like, that's great. Terrific. Thank you.
Oh, we love him.
Yeah. He is very reserved and a little sassy.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes books and being by himself and being smarter than everybody else. And he loves his dog so much. And I wanted to create a character who was on the surface extremely different from Misha, but like under the surface extremely similar to Misha. And they kind of bounced off each other in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that reads. So we loved him.
Ugh.
We loved him. We called him our sexy little professor.
He is. Yes.
He has like his little, like when we first meet him, no spoilers, but when we first meet him, he has all these odds and ends and his desk. And we were just like, we want him a little spectacles.
Yeah.
He doesn't wear them all the time, maybe. But in our mind, we were like, he has them that he takes out and like does his little work.
Reads his books.
Yes, I agree. I would very much be on board for that.
Right?
Actually, so.
Right? Like, it is hot. It is hot.
It's very hot.
It is hot. You know, button-down shirt, like, rolled up to the elbows and the glasses and, like, the book.
You know, little ink on it.
Little ink smears. Like, maybe, like, a little, like, right here from, like, the thoughtful, like.
Oh my God, Carissa. Yes, you're painting the picture. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, fan artists.
That's what I was just about to say.
So let me know if you want me to commission you for this, because I will throw money at you to make it happen. So.
Same.
We would love to see it.
Same. Okay, we are going to round out our spoiler-free discussion with a fun little game. And we would love for you to describe Songbird in 3 words.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
And after you give us your 3 words, we will tell you what our 3 words are.
Ooh. Okay. Damn. All right. I'll say heart-wrenching.
New year, new you. New Disney Plus watch list. And with so many titles to explore, finding your perfect pick is easy. From the intensity of The Bear to the comical but cryptic mysteries in Only Murders in the Building, or the thrilling story of Shogun, January just got better with Disney Plus. Tap the banner to learn more. 18 plus subscription required. Learn more at disneyplus.com.
Epic. Creepy.
Great words.
Ones.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah. Okay, ours are tormented, passionate, and vulnerable.
Ooh, I like those words. I like those words even better than my words.
Well, we spent a long time thesaurusing with things.
We did.
I love it. That's great. That's fabulous.
We had so much fun. We had so much fun. Well, Carissa, that wraps up our interview. Mm-hmm. We have had so much fun having you on and discussing, and thank you so much for joining us and taking the time to discuss The Crowns and Iaxia and your new book, The Songbird and the Heart of Stone. It's been our pleasure to have you on.
Yeah.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really wonderful. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Hi, listeners. Before we said goodbye to Carissa after interviewing her on the Crowns of Niaxia series, Kim and I just could not let her sign off without telling her how much we loved the War of Lost Hearts series. So we were originally not going to include this in the episode, but it was just a sweet and wonderful 5-minute discussion, and we decided to include it as a little bit of a bonus. But if you have not read The War of Lost Hearts, please tune out here and come back when you have, because there are spoilers. And with that, here you go. I know we didn't get to discuss The War of Lost Hearts, but we just have to say, like, I mean, we would love to have you back on and to discuss it. That book, I mean, we could start crying thinking about it, is literally, I think we don't go a week without talking about it.
No.
Oh.
Like, without Aoife and Rochet, like, we were unwell.
Unwell.
I think that character is the most unique character I've ever read in a book ever. Mm-hmm. And we talk about, we'll just text each other sometimes, no one, and then we'll all just respond with sobbing emojis. Like, literally, we'll just be like, no one. And then we'll all just be like, oh my God, no one.
Rochet. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad it was, like, a lot of fun to write. Like, I say fun with, like, quotes because, you know, it was a little dark, but that means a lot. So thank you. I know that's, like, my less popular series, but it's, like, always very meaningful to me when people, it's, like, very close to my heart. Daughter of No Worlds was, like, the only book, pretty much the only book I've ever written that was written, like, just for me, you know, like, I had no, like, deadlines, like, I was just writing it because I wanted to. So
yeah,
I love all of the books, but there is something special about The War of Lost Hearts when we were reading it that, I mean, like we said, it literally, it just never has left us. Mm-hmm. The characters. Talk about Morally Gray. I think that is really, truly, I wanted to bring them up when we were having those, when we were asking those questions, because Riche, Aoife.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Cadawan. I was 3 a.m. reading when Cadawan dies and I'm ugly sobbing.
Yeah.
Ugly sobbing when he dies in that battle. And I texted it to Kim and then literally like, the next book, he's like alive, but also like
evil,
killing so many people.
Yeah,
we were like, okay, how are we sobbing about him? And now we're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And, oh gosh. Okay. We could go on and on.
I know. We just had to bring it up. I was like, I cannot be in her presence and not bring up Aoife. Like, I cannot do it because that character is incredible.
She just needed to go to sleep.
Like, she was real tired, understandably. Real tired. Poor Aoife. There's some stuff coming in the Nyaxia books that are kind of like exploring some similar themes, and I hope that you enjoy it as much.
Oh,
I'm sure you will.
I'm intriguing.
Yeah, we trust you.
Yeah.
So we're really excited. We're so excited. It's like getting the arc was so wonderful to read, but then also it's like a little bit longer that we have to wait.
Yeah.
than everybody else. But we're excited.
I know. It's much slower now, you know, like the pace is like a little different. And it's very weird for me too, because I'm used to like, you know, when you're indie, you write, and you're working right up until the deadline, and then you press a button, and within 48 hours, the book is available everywhere to everybody.
Yeah.
So it's very much like you're immersed in it completely, and then it's out, mm-hmm. and then everybody's talking about it. So now it's very different because it's like you're immersed in it completely. Like Songbird is the most stressful book I've ever written ever in my entire life. It was like really wild. Mm-hmm. You know, you're pulling all your all-nighters and shit like that, and then it just kind of goes off into the ether for like 8 months. And then people start talking about it like almost a year later.
Yeah.
It's very, very different experience. But I will happily give you an arc of the next book so that you're at least you're staggered. Yeah, you know? Yeah, like at least you're kind of waiting.
There we go.
The same amount.
anything. We'll take anything. That ending was beautiful. It was a great ending.
It was.
But it was the kind of ending that leaves you like...
What? It was amazing.
But thank you so much, Carissa, for joining us. It really was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, everybody. So that wraps up our interview with the wonderful Carissa Broadbent. We hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. She was so lovely to chat with. So this interview, of course, was spoiler free for Songbird. But after the release of Songbird, like Anna said at the beginning, we are going to be releasing a special section all about Songbird, all the spoilers, all the things exclusively over on our Patreon. So please make sure you go over and join so that you are able to watch that, because it was incredible.
It was so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely want to go watch it.
Yes.
So that link, of course, will be in our show notes. And make sure you're following us on Instagram at Fies Fantasy Podcast and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Cheers, listeners. Bye.
Bye.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save